There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Thursday. We are live in Montgomery. A special session has been called, and it's all about infrastructure and the gas tax. And there's a friend of the show that's been on quite a bit with us, but it's always seems to be over the phone, even when he was down in Mobile. It's over the phone because he was busy. And so I was really surprised when he said, yeah, I'll let you come to your show in my office as we busted up into Secretary of State John Merrill's office. I'm so glad he did, because this is really been a lot of fun. I've gotten a chance to see State House and Capitol I've not seen before, and I'm really appreciative of you letting us be in here.
Well, we're delighted that you could come to your office today and visit here and talk to a number of guests. I know you had a lot of people on
through
today.
Your office,
which
y'all, we're not kind of in the chambers of the Secretary of State's office. We are in his office, so thank you.
Oh, we're excited that you're here.
So much to talk about, and I want to get into this as you're one person right now that doesn't have to deal with the infrastructure discussion, but you got a whole bunch of other things. Of course, we're always talking about the two sides of the coin, right? It's voter fraud, it's voter suppression. That's the seems to be the national narrative in discussion, and now even movement in the Democrats in Washington moving. Kind of walk us through where we stand and what you think about that. What HB1?
Yes, it is HR1, and let me tell you, Sean, it's a travesty what they're attempting to do there. It's very disappointing. 3 weeks ago yesterday, I was in Washington. I was asked to come testify as the Republican witness in the Committee on Homeland Security, and they took up HR1, and they wanted to know what our thoughts were about it. The Democrat witness was Secretary Alex Padilla from California, who's a good friend of mine. He is a very, very smart guy. He's an MIT Harvard guy. Just a little misguided on his political philosophy, but outstanding guy, outstanding husband and father. And Cindy and I have gotten to know his family over the last 4 years that we served together. But when they're talking about mandating same-day voter registration, mandating automatic voter registration, mandating the use of electronic poll books, mandating the use of paper ballots, mandating the use of early voting, mandating the use of same-day voter registration and early voting simultaneously, mandating the use of mail-in voting. These things are best left up to the states, and the 10th Amendment says so. That's not just what John Merrill says. That's what the Constitution of the United States says.
To the federal government, go to the states.
That's exactly right. And so that's where we want to be. Now, some of those things are good ideas. We already use paper ballots. We use electronic poll books in 30 of the 67 counties, and we're continuing to expand that. But don't tell me what we've got to do,
right?
Because the Constitution tells me what we've got to do, and we're going to continue to do those things. But if you want to be helpful to us, as we're trying to be helpful to our constituents and helpful to the people of Alabama, then we're interested in what you got to say. But if you're going to come in here giving us mandates, and they're unfunded or underfunded mandates, we're going to fight you. And I met with Senator McConnell a week before I had that hearing, and then got a call from last Thursday where they were talking about the bill still. He asked me to get some of my colleagues to support my position.
Right.
I was able to secure 15 other secretaries' support. We sent a letter to him yesterday, to Speaker Pelosi, as well as to Majority Leader McCarthy. So they would know what our position was,
right,
and why we felt like this needed to be rebuffed. And that's where we are today.
But they're trying to use this as, okay, here are these unfunded mandates. And key is unfunded mandates coming to the state. And then if you don't accept them, you're suppressing votes.
Well, you know, and again, Sean, look, they're entitled to their own opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts. So what are the facts as far as Alabama's concerned? These are the facts. Since January the 19th, 2015, we've registered 1,211,906 new voters. We now have a grand total of 3,468,747 registered voters in Alabama. Those numbers are unprecedented, unsurpassed in the history of the state. And we have done more per capita than any state in the union. I'm excited about that. We've also broken every record in the history of the state for voter participation in the last four major elections we've had. March 1, 2016, 1.25 million people went to the polls, voted in the presidential primary.
SEC for, yeah.
November the 8th, 2016, 2.1 million Alabamians went to the polls, broke every record in the history of the state for voter participation. December 12, 2017, 1.3 million Alabamians went to the polls, cast their ballot in the special U.S. Senate election. And November the 6th of last year, 1.7 million Alabamians went to the polls when Representative McMillan was reelected, when his brother was elected to be the treasurer, when I was reelected to this office, when the governor was elected to a full term, shattering the record by 500,000 votes.
So when you take that to them and say, how am I suppressing votes here? What's their answer?
Well, they have no answer. They have no answer. But because the thing that I did not say, which was my next statement, which is, in all of those elections, not one person was ever denied access to the vote because they didn't have a qualified government photo ID. And look, 96% of all eligible African Americans are registered to vote. 91% of all eligible Caucasian Alabamians are registered to vote. And 94% of all Alabamians that are qualified are registered to vote. So there's only two words you can say to that, my friend. Roll Tide. War Eagle for you, Steve.
Yeah, we got a split, split party in here. You and I will stay on the same, same side, Roll Tide. So you say this, and this goes on deaf ears in some states, and probably with the 15 others that are in your position in their states. It's welcome to be heard, I'm sure.
No doubt. And this is the thing. The thing that's so disappointing, like when Senator Jones came out and said what he did this weekend.
Yes.
That was frustrating because in February of 2018, I was in his office in Washington in the Russell Building. I sat down with him, and I said, I want to make sure you know what we've been doing and what is actually happening in our state as far as voter registration and voter participation are concerned. And I shared the numbers with him, just like I shared with you right now.
Right.
They weren't as high then as they are today.
Yeah.
And you can see,
that's,
you know,
pretty high numbers.
I didn't just pull that out of a sheet. You know, I'm giving those numbers every year, every week. I get an updated number on where we stand, and I memorize it, and I share it all over the state.
Y'all, he did that right off the top of his head. Yep.
And so this is the thing. I said, if you ever have a question about what we're doing, or if somebody reports something to you that you think is negative and needs attention, I'm not expecting you to call me, even though I have his cell number and he has my cell number. Have one of your team members call me. Tell me what they want us to give attention to, and we will. That's not unlike the conversation that I had with Secretary Clinton when she was running for president, Senator Sanders when he was running for president, President Clinton when he came here to represent Secretary Clinton, Congressman John Lewis in his office in Washington, Reverend Jesse Jackson in Birmingham, as well as in the governor's office in a couple of years ago, Congresswoman Terry Sewell, anybody that you can, Martin Luther King III, anybody that you can think of that's a national leader in the Democratic Party that has been in our state, they know what I've just shared with you. And I have told them, look, if you want to know the facts, we'll share the facts with you. Even if you don't think they're positive, we'll share the facts with you. But if you start sharing a narrative or creating one that is inconsistent with the truth, I'm going to bust you in the chops.
Well, I mean, think about that, because you talk about Representative Sewell, and then I see, you know, this push here to restore the Voting Rights Act, H.R. 1.
And H.R. 4 she's entering.
Yeah, and she's our, and you've had this conversation.
Look, I had it with her 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
2 weeks ago. I sat down with her.
So what does it seem like to you when you see this after you had that conversation? Here I'm reading what Representative Sewell
said. And she had already filed the bill. And I said,
before she talked to
him? Yeah, and I said, now, Terry, and Terry represents us in Washington. She's my member of Congress because where our home is in Tuscaloosa.
Right.
And I said, Terry, look, I said, I hear what you're saying, but these are what the numbers are in Alabama. So you can't represent them one way when the empirical data shows that they are this way, because this is the truth. And she said, well, we still need to work harder on this. We still need to do that. Look, I said, I'm not saying there's not more work to be done, but don't act like we got a problem, because we don't have a problem.
What was the registration rate of eligible Alabamians?
94%.
Okay.
And 96% on African Americans that are residents of Alabama.
And you're right. These are the facts that often get lost in the rhetoric. And we'll make sure they say that people understand these. Can you hang on to a second?
Absolutely.
Of course you can. I'm in your office. Coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. We return with Secretary of State John Merrill. And I'll grab some of your questions from the text line at 343-0106.
Gas tax.
If it had a problem at 5 cents, it certainly should have a double problem or more at 12 or 15%.
Sean Sullivan is in Montgomery on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Montgomery. And we're here in Secretary of State John Merrill's office and talking to the Secretary of State. Quick reminder, too, if you haven't done it yet, you need to start shaving with Harry's. I've been doing it for years. And somebody's giving me grief, well, a lot of people here, because I grew the beard here this winter. But I'm still shaving my neck and shaving the top of the beard with Harry's. And in a couple weeks here, when I get rid of the rest of the beard, I'll be back to full-time with Harry's. Been shaving with them for over 3 years. Join the 10 million of us who've tried Harry's. You'll get right now the best deal I've ever seen from Harry's. 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and travel cover for just $3 plus free shipping. Just make sure to use my code MOBILE when you go to harrys.com. Limited time offer, and this is for listeners right here on Midday Mobile. You'll get $5 off a trial set from Harry's with code MOBILE at harrys.com. So once again, you get the razor that's got the great blades, the great shave. You get the weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and the travel cover, which is on my Harry's razor out in my truck right now. All for just $3 plus free shipping when you use code MOBILE at harrys.com. So go to harrys.com today. Use code MOBILE at checkout to claim your offer. Let them know I sent you. Help support the show. Check them out. It is harrys.com. And we continue our conversation about votes and the votes in Alabama. I want to, Secretary of State John Merrill, please tell us the number again, because it's number one, it's cool to see you do it off the top of your head. But number two, registered voters in Alabama.
Total registered voters, 3,468,747, and total since I've been the secretary is 1,211,906 registered voters.
Now that's I stayed more in the communications building at the University of Alabama, not the mathematics building.
Right.
But that seems like around a 30-something% increase in voters.
Oh yeah, it's dramatic. Now look, we also need to remember we have removed more than 750,000 people from the voter roll.
Where'd they go?
Because those people moved away, they passed away, or they've been put away.
Right.
And whenever that happens, they need to come off the rolls. That's another part of the problem with that bill, because they think that once you've been registered to vote, you ought to stay on there forever, even if you died. I can't really understand that, because it makes no sense to me. If you're not maintaining your voter rolls, you are opening yourself up for fraudulent behavior to occur, and you're encouraging it to occur.
Well, and it would be a dereliction of your duty, right? If your duty is to maintain the voter rolls, then taking people off is as important as putting
people
on.
That's part of it. Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's talk about that. When we talk about voter fraud, people call me all the time like, Sean, there's voter fraud there and voter fraud. What does voter fraud look like?
Well, they need to report it to us if they see it. First of all, they don't need to be calling Sean.
Yeah, they need to call your office.
They need to call us, because we are going to make sure we capture what it is they're trying to report. We're going to make sure that it's investigated by local law enforcement with Sheriff Cochran or the police chief in whichever municipality in Mobile County is affected. Or we're going to make sure we've turned it over to the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency or to a local district attorney or to the Attorney General's office for additional prosecution. And we will take anything that is given to us that appears to be irregular or inconsistent in the area of voter participation and identify it as fraudulent behavior. And then we'll make sure that it's investigated and properly adjudicated.
So somebody could call your office here and say, I'm not sure that this was fraud, but this seemed fishy or something like that. And offer it to you, and then you can take it
from there. And we have an electronic method for reporting through StopVoterFraudNow.com on our website or at that website that was created for this purpose. And we make sure that if somebody does not have access to the Internet, then we will mail them the form to their home so they can complete it and return it to us. But that allows us to keep it filed electronically, which is easier to share with the other authorities as we move the investigation forward. Since I've been the Secretary, Sean, we've had 877 unique instances that have been reported, and we've had 877 that have been adjudicated from our office. Now, all of those have not resulted in convictions.
Right.
We still have some that are active and ongoing, but we have gotten them all out of our office to another location.
Meaning a location, like you said, the local
investigator.
How do you decide that? How do you decide what the right entity is?
Our lawyers determine that based on their training, their experience, and their conversations with those authorities.
What do you see the most of? I mean, at least, what do you get the most calls about? What kind of voter fraud? I mean, because it's such a blanket term.
Yeah, the worst is always, and we'll see this again in 20, is the municipal contest. Because... Okay.
Like when you were down in Mobile.
Oh, yeah. Because probably of the 877 instances that have been reported to us, more than 600 of those have come from municipal contest. More than 600. Because people...
Maybe less oversight?
Well, less oversight, and they don't know what the difference is. If somebody has stolen my sign out of my yard or from Harry's barbershop, and they say, that was my sign... That's voter fraud. Well, that's not voter fraud, okay?
Right.
It's misbehavior on the part of the person.
Right.
But we record that, we document that, and then we make sure that it's turned over to who needs to see it. But when we get examples of 119 absentee ballot applications being mailed to an abandoned home in Camden in Wilcox County, that's voter fraud.
Yes.
Because all of those applications are going to it happened. And 109 were mailed to a municipality in Brighton. And that particular instance, all those were mailed to a candidate's mother's home.
That's a packed house with that many folks in it.
You got that right.
Voters.
Especially when she lives by herself. And I'll also tell you, that's one of the ones that's still active. And we're not going to stop on that one until we get a conviction.
It looks all kind of different ways. But that's one of the things. So... people getting these absentee ballots and gathering them.
That's right. Harvesting those, making sure that at that point, from some instances, we have a name for these folks. Absentee election brokers. Where those
people, that sounds official.
They are paid to go get votes for people. And in some instances, they'll give them a six-pack of beer. They'll give them a fifth of whiskey. They'll give them a carton of Red Man, carton of cigarettes. In Steve McMillan's case, just a can of Red Man. I mean, a can of Skoll would have been enough. But, you know, it just depends on what your lowest common denominator is for you to get the result.
How does it work? So they take whatever this stuff is, the currency of this, and go in communities and say, I need this vote.
That's correct. And then those people are rewarded for their efforts on behalf of the candidate that they're working for.
Will they ever turn around when you get to make this situation where you have 109 absentee ballots go to one house? Can you ever get somebody on the record and say,
we've had instances where certain absentee ballots are not counted because when they come back, they were examined by someone. They didn't vote for the right person, so there was something wrong with the ballot, and it was never counted as a part of the official tally because it was not consistent with the way that it has to be filed in order for it to count for that candidate. So
somebody got the red man and didn't make the right vote.
That's right.
I got the. But once again, and it's interesting because I think that's good to hear because we have this kind of blanket term of voter fraud. And you're saying, and Lord knows every campaign, I know you hear more than I, somebody's stealing signs, they're trying to change the election. That's It's a misdemeanor local
deal. That's right.
But what you're talking about is actual real, how it's done, which is interesting to know how it's done.
Yes, sir. And you know, what's also funny to me is listening to these people who say, we need mail-in voting in Alabama, like they have in Oregon or Washington or Colorado, where they mail a ballot to every registered voter's home. Every registered voter's home. And then the intended voter receives that ballot, marks it, and returns it. In Alabama, if that was going on, you would have people that would be following the mail truck, taking them out of their P.O. boxes or their mailboxes at the house and filling them out. We're not going to tolerate that behavior.
Thank you for having us in here. We're going to talk some more tomorrow when we reinvade your office.
Yes, sir.
Secretary of State John Merrill on with us right here on Midday Mobile. We're coming right back. Representative Steve McMillan joins us next. And I got a can of and a bag of Red Man and a can of Skull. We're good. We'll go ahead.
I am willing to call you, the members of the Alabama legislature, into a special session if necessary.
Governor Ivey calls a joint session to pass a gas tax increase.
We need to rebuild Alabama's infrastructure.
Sean Sullivan is live in Montgomery on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. And yeah, we're live in Montgomery. Special session called here to deal with infrastructure and infrastructure only. And this is a special session that is, just a couple days old. And it's lucky for us to have Representative Steve McMillan, District 95, who just got out of, what do you call that?
Public hearing.
Public hearing. All right, I'm going to have you move that mic up just a little bit there, closer. There you go. the public hearing that went on, as this is in the House first because it's a revenue bill. So this is y'all's first before it goes to the Senate.
That's great.
All right. Give us the latest. I mean, you just got out. You just walked out and came over here.
They just voted the bills out of committee.
Okay.
Pretty much unanimous. There may have been a couple of no votes. They'll be reported to the House this afternoon from committee and subject to being voted on tomorrow.
So these three bills, and I'll get into the, once again, the description of these three bills. So these could be going to the Senate by...
The House.
No, but out of the House to the Senate by...
Could go to the Senate tomorrow afternoon, conceivably.
Okay. So that's, I'm just kind of keeping a timeline here. So the three bills, and this is something that is, because people hear, okay, it's gas tax, it's infrastructure, it's rebuild Alabama, but you've pointed out this is three parts of this, and there's one part that's got to come first. And what is that?
It's a three-bill package. The first one they're doing, since this seems to be of some concern to a lot of constituents, is the accountability measure. With audits, oversight,
the accountability,
disclosure and transparency, even to the money that's going to the counties, municipalities, they're required to post it, public notices on their websites if they have them, in the mayor's office. It's very thorough. I'll go over some of the details if you'd like to.
Absolutely. Yeah, kind of give us an idea of when we talk about this oversight, what does this look like? As people, because I... Representative McMillan, I've had a lot of people call me and say, we're just giving more money to waste. We're just giving them more money to waste.
This specifies by law the things that it can be spent on, and you'll have to forgive me for not having it already. I should have opened it to that page.
So you've got a pile of notes.
I knew that was going to be a question. But like I said, even the money that goes to the municipalities and counties, we've got three.
And we need to describe that too. If people don't understand that, there's a breakdown between, what is it, 35%, 65%?
It's in round figures, 66% for the state, 8 point, not quite 9 for the municipalities.
So the municipalities get that no matter what, but they can still try to get the additional money from the state.
There'll be some grant programs and matching funds.
Okay.
There'll be some revenue. Interesting. This is something I found out yesterday at another hearing. It's interesting to me that some of the counties that were eligible for federal funding did not even have the matching funds. And in some cases, that was as little as $14,000. Now, $14,000 is a lot of money. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying.
But it could mean...
But when a county can't come up with $14,000 to use for matching funds, that's pretty tough.
So they would be, because you have matching funds coming from the feds, and so could a municipality, not the state, let's talk about, I mean, let's say it's Gulf Shores. say it's Orange Beach, something like that, right? That they, there's federal money. Could they go after that with the matching funds coming from their 8% cut coming out of this versus having the state do it and then trying to petition the state to do the full project?
There's a mixture of a lot of things, and it's complex, and it's easy to misunderstand and intentionally misrepresent.
We're here about the facts, and you're a great educator on this, so kind of tell us how this works.
This provision that two counties could go together, or a county and a city could go together with joint projects.
Okay.
And pool the funds and enhance the funding.
Okay.
So it's well thought out. Bill Poole, who was a primary sponsor and probably did as much of the work as anybody else, is held in very high regard by the members of the House. Something occurred that I have never seen, and I've been here a pretty good while.
Yes.
The 2 years in a row, Bill got a standing ovation for the Education Trust Fund budget that he proposed. That's unheard
of. Y'all don't stand up and cheer for everybody?
Nope. Rarely happens. Rarely happens.
Okay, so with this breakdown here, so now we know that state gets a portion, the counties, municipalities get a portion. Now, what about the – because this is this oversight. I want to get back to this. The oversight, will we be able to go look at, okay, here's this LDOT project. They want to do something in Baldwin County, or here's something they want to do something up here in Montgomery County. Are those listed somewhere, or does it then say, and here's another project for Gulf Shores, or here's another project for the city of Montgomery, or is it
– They have to propose an annual program of projects.
Okay.
Then at the end of the year, they have to report what was actually accomplished to the penny. There's no room for wiggle. Let me give you some examples of the limitations. Maintenance, these are the things that have to be used for. Maintenance, improvement, replacement, and construction of roads and bridges. And I'm going to shorten this up for time constraints. But maintenance, improvement, replacement, and construction of roads and bridges by municipalities, matching funds for federal road or bridge projects, payment of any debt associated with a road or bridge project, joint road or bridge project without one or more joining counties, with one or more joining counties, that's the one I referenced earlier. Then it goes on to say that the county and municipality shall not use funds for salaries, benefits, or any other form of compensation for county, municipal, or contract employees. Purchase, lease, or maintenance of equipment other than equipment purchased and permanently installed as a part of a road or bridge project, maintenance or construction of public buildings or other structures that are not an integral part of the system of roads and bridges. All fund records shall be audited by the examiner of public accounts the same manner as all other county municipal funds. They have to, as I said, adopt an annual transportation plan no later than August 31st of the next fiscal year. And then it has to be approved by affirmative vote of the council or the city or county governing body. And then, as I said, posted in conspicuous places and on the web and in the mayor's office and at City Hall and at the courthouse. So maximum transparency.
Okay, and that's the accountability comes partially through the transparency. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about the accountability. Okay, I'm close to break, but I want to tell you what, we'll want to get into this. So accountability, first part. Second part is funding mechanism, right?
Correct.
And that is the 10-cent increase on
That's
a gallon
correct.
Of gas.
Six cents first and then 2 cents each consecutive
So
year
3 years total to get to 10
three
cents.
3 years total.
Easing our toe into the hot bathtub.
Right.
Right, to get
That's
in there.
That's one way of putting it. Another way is the whole thing about cutting off the puppy's tail. Sometimes it's better to do it all at one time rather than 3 weeks apart.
Right, but is this going to be something that y'all could cut? Let's say this passes. 6 cents first year. Can there be y'all come back here next year and change that and not do the next two and the next two, or is it?
It could be amended. There's some provisions in here. For example, the bond money that cannot be.
Okay.
But there are other things that could be changed.
Okay. This is going to be projected at how much revenue additionally for the state?
$300 and some odd million. I think is the last number I heard.
So now we hear from people that say, okay, go ahead.
And forgive me for interrupting, but it's so complicated that I don't want people to misunderstand anything. The reason I can't tell you an exact amount is one of the things they did is reduce the fees that were going to be paid by hybrid and electric and fuel-driven vehicles.
Right, so that's just been the last day and a half of that.
It went from,
what was it, 250 for full electric and 125 for hybrid. Yeah, now what is it now?
Basically cut it in half, if I'm not mistaken.
And what, if y'all don't understand what we're talking about, so this was the portion, all of y'all that have called and said, hey, what about electric cars? They're not paying their share. This was the way that the bill was addressing that, right? That it was getting a yearly fee for those vehicles.
And in addition to that, and some of the owners of these type vehicles have always been concerned about recharge stations.
Mm-hmm.
And Alabama has, I think it's 271 currently, which is fewer than any of our neighboring states. Florida, you can imagine, has a couple of thousand,
right.
I think. So that was a big bone. You know, if I had an electric car operated by batteries, I'd have to stop and recharge a couple of times between home and Montgomery if I was going to
use it. Right. Depends on how many batteries, right? But it's, I think it's worth addressing and making sure we do it properly, because today is the fewest number of electric cars ever on the road. Because tomorrow will be more. Tomorrow will be more. I don't know at what ratio, but it's going to grow. Right?
And once it gets to 2% of the total volume of vehicles, then the fees are reduced again.
That's built in.
Yeah, and this to answer your question about the fees, the annual license tax and registration fee is now $200, which is a reduction, and then the annual license tax and registration fee for plug-in hybrid is $100.
All right. Well, I know they are. I know they're ready to go to. Let's go to the news break, and we'll come back. We are live in Montgomery for a special session. Guest State Rep 95 Steve McMillan. We are talking about the three parts. When you hear the discussion of this, it's three parts to this infrastructure bill. You got oversight, you got revenue, and you got the Port of Mobile. We'll talk about it when we get back. Y'all stay close.
Once again, live from Montgomery, here's Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile, live from Montgomery. And we're up here during special session. A reminder, too, tomorrow morning, I'll be checking in from 6 to 8 with Dalton and Kelly, and then we'll be talking long form, starting at the 8 o'clock hour tomorrow. And, of course, a lot of things moving pretty quickly up here in Montgomery, so there'll be much more to talk about in the morning and tomorrow during Midday Mobile. Speaking of things moving quickly, I'm talking to Representative Steve McMillan, and you said, I mean, this is something that the Senate could have. It could be out of y'all's hands in the House, and it could be moving to the Senate by tomorrow.
Tomorrow afternoon, yes, sir.
You can get. I'm not asking you to exactly predict, but you can gauge this. You have wisdom here. Is this something that goes up for a vote? Does this make it? First of all, does it pass? Second of all, is it passing by Tuesday or Wednesday next week? Is this a midweek next week thing?
I think it will pass. This is a one-shot deal. It's not going to come around again. I'm going to tell you that. The leadership has said this is it.
What's it like in the House with no votes?
It's hard to tell because we got so many freshmen that have not come under fire, so to speak, don't have the experience of working with them, so it's hard to predict what they might do. Some of the old-timers probably will not support it. We'll just have to see how it works.
And let's talk about this, what it means for us back in Southwest Alabama. We talked about the oversight, talked about the funding mechanism here with the port. I talked about it last hour with Jimmy Lyons from the port. This is an issue that it's funny the amount of no's I've seen from listeners in our area back home. Mm-hmm. And heck, yeah, there's a good chance that you or me or any of us listening back home either have a relative or a friend or somebody has something to do with the port. There's a chance we have a connection. So what do we tell somebody? What do you tell somebody in the House that's from Huntsville or Tuscaloosa or Etowah County or something like that when you're trying to get them?
Interestingly enough, and we may have mentioned this already, forgive me for repeating it, but the Mobile Chamber and some other groups in Mobile had hosted some legislators to come down and take a tour of the docks. And that paid big dividends because there were people that I think probably would not have supported the bill had they not seen it and become to realize how significant that is to the economy of the whole state and the potential with automobile industry and other industries, that Airbus and aeronautics and the other industries that we've gotten that will be using those facilities.
And obviously, if somebody's going to get you know, we talked about this throughout the day before you came in. I mean, if somebody's going to get wood products out of the state, they're going to get chickens out of the state to ship. Yep. If they're going to get coal out or in, they're going to get metal slabs out or in. I mean, it comes through us.
Big. It's really big.
And so you've got to, I mean, y'all have done the first part, getting those members of the legislature to get it. But they also have to kind of sell it back home and say, this is why it matters. This is why when somebody in Boaz is filling up and there's an extra bit of this money that's going to Mobile, how you explain your case?
Well, I think they've got to realize, if I'm not mistaken, it's something like 132,000 jobs directly related to the docks, because we have port dock facilities in other parts of the state, Demopolis and other places, that I think those people realize the significance of it too.
I'm going to ask the strange question. You know I'm want to do this. So the strange question is, what do we do if this doesn't pass? What I mean, we just talked about what it means for the economic development. We talked about what it means for roads in our state. We talked about how important it is for getting these projects. So what if this doesn't pass? Where do we go?
We haven't even talked about that.
And I'm not trying to be negative person, but I think it's a fair question to ask.
We'll have to regroup. I don't think the sponsors already said it's his last shot at it. The speaker said it's the last time. We'll just stumble along and keep kicking the can down the road and getting further behind all of our neighboring states. I was amazed since 2015, the states that have passed similar legislation, except ours, is better because we've taken advantage of the fact that so many of them have, that we know what worked and what didn't work.
Right.
And the accountability measures are those, some of the things we picked up that are improvement on other states. But since 2015, and really that was, we went back that far just to pick up one state. A lot of this was just in the last 2-3 years. South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, North Carolina, Kentucky, and Florida have all increased or supplemented their road infrastructure in some portion of revenue. The three that haven't, Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi.
Well, and in that first list, you mentioned some of our direct competitors.
I mean,
think about how many of these stories we talked about. Are you talking about South Carolina or something like that? Somebody we're head-to-head with, it seems like, in all these big... you're looking for plants, and I mean, whether it be discussion of Airbus and the aeronautical side or vehicles and the automotive side, South Carolina's been neck and neck with us a bunch.
And the docks is right in there with it. And I didn't mention this, but if we do the things we want to do with this funding, we will enhance the capability of the docks to the extent that we will be very competitive with the other docks that we compete with. Be able to get the automobile ship from Mobile instead of Charleston, for example.
And that's what people got to think about when we've had the discussions at home about the deepening and widening of the Panama Canal and what it means for us. And just last hour, talking to Jimmy Lyons, he had to keep finally put it in some terms I can understand. He said, hey, we got to deepen the river and the port by 5 feet because we can load those ships heavier. They can take the load. Right now they can't because it's too shallow. It's that simplistic that economy of scale makes a big difference. I think he finally put the, as my granddad said, the hay down there where the horses can get after it, you know, that a lot of us could understand. And that's the play that makes us competitive or maybe beat some of those places like Charleston.
Absolutely. And I just encourage people to find out the facts. You know, this is the first major issue we've had that's controversial since social media became so popular. And there's a lot of misinformation because I've gotten enough emails to know that there's, with some of the comments and questions.
You know, there's a couple people asking this question without going into a full civics lesson here with just a couple minutes left, but they said, why is this not a referendum? Why do we not get to vote on this?
I think timing, it would be one thing, the cost of a special election. For example, I think the last numbers I heard just in Baldwin County alone, if you had a referendum, it would cost $80,000. It may have been more than that, but I don't want to exaggerate. But
right.
A minimum of $80,000.
Just in Baldwin County.
So you're talking, I think the estimate's something like $2 or $3 million to have a statewide referendum.
I remember y'all last time we had a special and y'all were all screaming about the amount of money that it cost.
And if we waited till the next session, you know, we'd just be getting that much further behind.
All right. If people want some more information on this, I mean, we're passing along here. I'm putting things out. I guess they can even call up here if people got specific questions about
Absolutely.
What you're looking at.
Absolutely.
So just call up here to where I mean, if you're looking for, if you're going to.
242-7600 for the house.
There you go. And there's
334 area code.
That's right. We're not back home. So 334. And we're going to talk about this more tomorrow. Are you, what else is on the slate for the house? Now, what's next? What's
these about? Three bills will be it for this special
session. Are you going to be back tonight?
We'll be back this afternoon. I don't know, it's 2 or 2:30. We'll go back in to have those bills reported from committee since they were given a favorable report. And then they'll be on the agenda in the morning. My guess is we may start as early as 9 o'clock in the morning and try to knock them out tomorrow.
Representative Steve McMillan, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
All right, coming back with y'all tomorrow morning. We'll see you here for Mobile Mornings. Paul Feinbaum next.